get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination. Hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
We're live.
Well, we're back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Jimmy on the board. In a little bit, we should have Mr. John Flanagan, maybe John Lee, and Nancy's on today. All kinds of stuff to talk about. We have the S&P futures down 53. Ouch. NASDAQ futures down 227. This is on top of Friday, where the S&Ps were down 100. It's 1.5%. NASDAQ down 443. So there's no real joy in the market the last few days, last week or today. We have interest rates, at least, are kind of unchanged today. They've been going up every single day. So that's not good. But, Jimmy, we got all kinds of stuff to talk about. What do you think of Iowa beating the number of Florida?
That was an upset.
Yeah.
That was an upset. Kentucky kind of, you know.
They got drilled.
Made it look good.
For a while.
Kansas, the same thing. I do think that Bill Self, now he's four times getting into the tournament and four times can't get out of the first round or the second round. So
There's only one...
He might be gone.
There's only one second-tier seed in, and that's Texas.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Those guys are pretty good. I mean, they had played a play-in game, but it seems to me, and, you know, you don't want to gripe about everything, but it seems to me that the teams that are the big teams, the $10 million teams and plus, like the one guy was talking about, you don't have $10 million, you can't play in this game anymore. Okay, well, that's fine, I guess. It's probably true. You see these other teams, and they can win a game, you know, which is fine. They can complete a game or compete in the second half, and the officials... I don't know, I'm always griping on officials, but they favor the other team, the favorite, so much it's scary, it seems. So then the other team would get a couple guys in foul trouble, they don't have the depth, and then the good team pulls away in the second half. Is that pretty much the drift in this whole thing, or am I wrong here?
I don't know if you're wrong, Chief, but what I am going to say is, like, it was Self against Patino. Patino could get as good caliber kids is Bill Self. Bill Self, I don't think, is that good of coach. Patino actually can coach. I do agree with these big schools and the Big Ten, obviously, is still there. Purdue is still in there. You know, Michigan State's still in there. Michigan's still in there. I think UCLA lost. I think Illinois lost. So
Illinois in.
And so yeah. That's four out of the Big Ten are still alive.
I think it's how many Big Ten get in?
Well, Nebraska got in.
Yeah, they're in. They're still in.
Okay.
The only teams that are out are Ohio State and Wisconsin.
Okay. No, UCLA lost.
UCLA. Well, they still have Michigan State.
Yeah.
Purdue.
I mean, the Big Ten had a larger than normal representation.
Well, because they got a larger than normal amount of teams now.
That is true, too. They are.
I mean, I'm sitting there watching UCLA play last night, and I'm going, wait a minute, these guys are Big Ten. Oops.
Yeah.
So,
the Big Ten is right now pretty much the power conference.
The market has just flipped to the positive. We're up 160 now. As Trump has just told the military to postpone attacks against Iranian power plants. Gee, I wonder who front run that one. The NASDAQ's up 520. We've had a massive turnaround here of what? 700 points in the NASDAQ?
Well, he
this is the kind of market we're dealing with the people we
know,
have in charge.
But I seriously think, Chief, like many New Yorkers, they're starting to figure out he says a lot of stuff, but he doesn't ever back it up. You know,
we did back the war up. We are killing people.
Well, he said I gave him 48 hours to open up the streets, and now you're telling me Iran opened up the streets? I highly doubt that.
These are massive moves in markets that, in my opinion, shouldn't even be trading other than during the regular trading hours, but that's me. But this is a huge thing. All of a sudden, everything's okay. Evidently, it's all okay.
Well, maybe we've struck a deal.
I don't know if we're doing
it. Iran did send missiles over to Riyadh and a few other places. We're finding out that their missiles have a longer range than we thought.
Yeah, I wonder where they're getting them from. Well, this is one of the most spectacular moves I've seen in a long, long time.
Yeah, that is a quick move. But again, I think he loves it because he'll be on, you know, he needs to be on in the media cycle constantly.
Constantly. There's no question about that. But this is definitely Dow futures jump 1,000 points after Trump says U.S. and Iran have, well, they got some kind of a deal. It's you can't even make it across the top of my machine here. So there's obviously, once you dig for some of this news, I was going to talk a little bit about Chavez this morning, but obviously the market's more important. Do you believe this? I don't know that much of the history of Chavez. Obviously, he's part of the movement for migrant workers and things like that, and he's a huge hero in the Hispanic community. And all of a sudden now he's been tainted with bringing young girls up in the system and taking advantage of them and something. Well, now everybody's trying to figure out how to take his name off all the street signs. There's a Chavez Way in Pilsen here, and I think there's a school named after him. We're trying to change
the
name of the school.
They're thinking of changing it.
Well, Mike, and I don't really have any problem with that, although this idea of going back in history and nailing people from, he's recent, but they're going back and saying, you know, Columbus was a sleazebag. Well, yeah, he was a sleazebag, but he still discovered America. And it's this idea of projecting your morality all the way back. Anyway, how is it that we can do this with this guy and yet we still can't out the people on Epstein's list? And Epstein stuff, because the people are still here, most of which are politicians or rich guys. Why can we do one and not the other?
That's a good question, Chief. I don't know.
Well, the one guy in Congress wrote off the list. I don't know how he found an unredacted list, but he ran off the list. Ran off. I don't remember half of them. The last one was Trump, but he ran off. He wrote off a list of like 27 people. He named them all in Congress in front of it wasn't Pam Bondi. It was somebody else. It might have been Pam Bondi. No, it was in front of Cash Patel. And Patel was just, you know, looking at him, which is, the guy almost turned white when he started rattling off the money. Why are they protected and we're gonna spend all our time pulling Chavez off street signs?
Okay. I don't see anything on the Yahoo. We show the Dow futures are slightly positive.
No, yeah, they're 10 minutes behind. You gotta be looking at the live stuff like I am. S&Ps are up 170. Nasdaq futures are up 600. Nasdaq futures are down one.
They say Iran has struck in spite of Trump's ultimatum, so they obviously don't think.
Here's the headline. Dow futures jump 1,000 points after Trump says U.S. and Iran have held productive talks.
Well, I don't have a live stream, so.
Well, you know, you gotta watch on TV. They have it, but obviously I have it here for my stuff. But that's interesting. Mr. Flanagan comes out, and we'll have to talk about this. We had all kinds of other stuff to talk about, but we certainly will talk about this. This whole thing is this idea that we're fighting wars against all these people. There's a veterans group. No, just one group. It was on BBM this morning talking about.
The Yahoo now shows everything positive.
Yep, because they're on a 10-minute delay. This veteran comes down, he's head of this veterans group, and he says, you know, I want the representatives and I want people to say no more wars. This guy's a veteran of Kosovo, which I even forgot about that war. And he goes, we've been at war ever since 9/11, we've been at war constantly. He goes, we got to stop this. What are we doing? There's no question the dude is right. I don't... Anyway, in terms of people managing money, like I do at this point, it's actually been, if you have protection on, this kind of movement is all opportunity. I mean, really, because stuff moves back and forth, and you adjust your position, and you end up in a position where you're kind of predisposed to buy low and sell high to a little bit. You get a little longer on the way down when you're down, and you get a little shorter on the way up. And most of the time, it really, you almost have to hold your nose and do it, because the market's way down, and you go, boy, should I roll these puts down or shouldn't I, type of thing, and you end up doing it, and a lot of times it becomes the correct trade. However, even if you are, quote, protected, you know, and I'll say this because I'm honest to a fault, you really don't make dollar for dollar on the way down. Even if the stock plunges so much, for instance, if you have a stock that's trading 500 and it runs to 450, and say you had the 495 puts, well, you're going to say, well, I don't want these anymore because I want to be able to roll those down so the stock comes back. I'll make my money on the puts, and oh, by the way, I won't have lost anything on the stock, and it could be terrific. But even if you roll them down to, say, the 70s, which is $25, and you get $24 for it, I mean, obviously, you've made up a huge amount of the money that the stock lost on the way down, but you're still, like, giving up the buck. And then you got to buy the new ones, and there's a premium to that one. So it's still not, you truncate the losing to a huge amount, but it's still not really winning. It's not like you bought extra one of them. The only time we really won on this, well, when I say when you won, when something collapsed, was in 2007, if anybody remembers back that far. The volatility, which now it's high, so the price of protection is high. So it's a whole different game than it was back then. Back then, when we hit our high in 2007, before everything fell apart, the volatility was down to like 9. It was ridiculously low. So the puts were so cheap, and the market was so high, I'm going, you know, this thing, we're pretty high here. Why don't we buy some extras? Well, then on the way down, the volatility exploded, and of course we had extra puts. We ended up making a bunch of dough on the way down. And that's why, you know, we were Morningstar's Investor of the Year, Money Manager of the Year in 2007 or whatever. So, I mean, you can if you buy extras, but right now when you're VIX, now the VIX is down $4 this morning all of a sudden to 22, but the VIX at 27, your cost of insurance is high. And you know, the cost of insurance is high, why? Because it ought to be high, right? It's like trying to buy fire insurance when you get brush fires all around you. So, I mean, right now you really have to, I mean, even today with the thing running back up here like this, I mean, this will not be the last blast of the Iran war, I don't think. You know, but hopefully it will be, that there actually would be talks. But how do you have talks when every time the other group gets together, the Israelis blow them up? What is that all about, Jimmy? I mean,
the Israelis, well, like you said, Netanyahu wants to stay in power. He has to have a continual war, otherwise he knows he is going to go to jail.
Well,
at some point, I think the Israelis are going to get tired of it. I mean, he has two fronts. He has the one in Lebanon.
Still got Gaza.
He's got Gaza a little bit. Well, they don't think that's a front. They think that's theirs. And he now has to hit him back with Iran. They even admitted an ICBM or a missile hit on the southern part of Israel that made it through. Now, on the southern part of Israel...
Yeah, they're giving the guy, the reporter that announced it, they're giving death threats against him because somebody's got a bet that no missile would get through.
Yeah, well, now they just recently, a missile got through on this weekend on the southern part. Now, if you know where the southern part of Israel is, that's off of the Red Sea, and it's not the greatest place. It's also where the Ethiopian tribe of Israel lives. It's not the greatest place in the world to live. It is very, very arid desert, where a lot of Israel isn't. This place, you can't grow much anywhere.
So many stocks have really come back. Microsoft was up 8, now it's only down up 4.
Well,
it'll be interesting to see if this hangs.
I think the president's going to come on. They're showing the White House. Means usually he needs to tell people that there is a deal.
Well, the rumor originally was the there was some kind of negotiation going on with. Now this is just a rumor, although it wouldn't surprise me. There was a rumor when there was some proposal on the table from the U.S. And I've also read some articles and saw some stuff on YouTube that out of all the kind of, well, the extreme people that run Iran, who I have no love for, allegedly, one of the most moderate guys in there was the Ayatollah, which I find hard to believe, but I read this in a couple spots. And the subject that got them all together when the Israelis blew them up was the consideration of our proposal.
It could have been.
Well, if that's the truth, you know what? I didn't like those guys, but that kind of sucks. You know, whatever, I guess. But anyway, I wanted to talk a little bit, and we'll shoot her flanning in a bit. I want to talk a little bit about the election. Did you, I don't know if you were up early yesterday and listened to Ad Issue. You know, guy Flannery from the South Side, he was the political reporter on Channel 2 here forever.
Yeah.
And, nice guy. I mean, I've met him a couple times. I met him because I was on jury duty with him. And he used to ride the train to South Rock Island. He'd walk to the train station. I mean, he's kind of a regular dude. But he retires, but he still does the stuff for, the special elections. Well, not from that, but he comes out of retirement to comment on elections and so forth. And I touched on this a little bit last week, but I guess it's my shot, Jimmy. It's a Supreme Court. When they make a ruling, I guess it's based on law and all, and they're not supposed to consider other stuff. But sometimes you got to consider what you're going to do and where it's going to go, right? And this goes back to Flannery was talking. It was almost like he listened to Stocks and Jacks, although he did a better job. He was talking about the Citizens United case, where the Supreme Court basically said that corporations are people and they get to spend as much money as they want on elections, basically, right? I don't know if that's the exact, I'm sure that's not the exact thing, but that's how it's come out. You know, and that's, I guess, okay. You know, I'm sure they're right on the law, and I'm not. The only part of that is I don't know how you can go back in people's minds, and what the founding fathers meant about putting money in elections where it's a right of a citizen. And none of the founding fathers even knew what a corporation was.
So yeah, they did.
How would they know? It wasn't invented for another 100 years.
No, there was. It was the Indian East Trading Company.
There were no corporations in the U.S. until like the first one.
Not in the U.S., but there were corporations.
All right, you're gonna argue about everything, but the fact is, the idea that some corporation in New Hampshire was going to influence a race in South Carolina, it couldn't possibly have crossed their mind. How could it? It was like a 10-day horse ride or 20-day to get down there.
True.
And I think, I mean, I've said this before, that the founding fathers, what did people live to in those days? I mean, some people lived older, but the chances
about 35, 40.
Probably more than that. But you and I, the chances of you and I getting to Washington with 435 people in the House, well, there weren't 100 in the Senate because there weren't 50 states back then. But anyway, there was a bunch of people.
Ah, here it is. He had a meeting with Iran.
He did.
Well, yeah, he had a great phone call. It was spectacular.
Oh, great phone. Where, who?
That's a good question. With Iran. That's all we're hearing. It's on the breaking news. Great meetings with Iran happened over the last 2 days.
Well, is he talking to the guy's kid that they said is all wounded?
The great meetings.
Yeah.
That's all you need to know.
Okay. Anyway, where I was going with this is, now these people are doing stuff. Now the Supreme Court, just like, Trump probably has a bitch when he says, okay, they got rid of the terrorists, but they didn't tell us whether we're supposed to pay them back or not. I mean, they make these rulings and they duck back into what cave they're in. I don't see how you can. Now the Citizens United. Now, if you look at, we'll kick it up here because
they're very intent on a deal, and there could be a regime change this week.
They're not going to get rid of the guy they just put in, just because of Trump said so.
Well, I'm just seeing what the breaking news on CNBC is saying right now.
All the guys that are in power, the Revolutionary Guard, they're all going to walk out and then give it to like nice people.
No. If you're in power, you're not going to give up power.
Trump would know about that, yeah.
Exactly.
Anyway, what I'm talking about here is there's a super PAC primary. You know, I was going to talk about this today, so I'll dig in here. We'll keep doing the regular news as it goes. But anyway, the Citizens United did not have any rules on this stuff. So you can, if Stocks and Jacks was huge, and we didn't like somebody, we wanted to run negative ads on them. We could say we're the back of the yards pack, you know, where I was born. Who the hell was the back of the yards pack? Well, they wouldn't know it was us, Jimmy. So if you're going to do this, I think you at least ought to identify yourself, don't you? Or that would just be me. But, so every one of these people didn't have a... So even though the... like we're talking about AIPAC. There were at least five. AIPAC is the American-Israeli Political Action Committee. But on the bottom of the ads, they never said, this paid for by AIPAC. When Pritzker ran all his negative ads against... what's his name? Raja. I would like to see Pritzker's face on the ad, saying, I ran this ad against Raja. Tell me what a sleazebag he is. I have a feeling that if Pritzker's face was on there, Raja might have won. But what's his pack? The Free Illinois pack or Save Illinois pack or something? They've got these names. You have no idea who they even are.
I guess. You know, they did say Raja got a lot of money from crypto.
Okay, so... right, when those guys, they're not the crypto pack either. crypto. They got their scorecard right here. Crypto. Actually, they're down the pay. Artificial intelligence, APAC. Here we go, crypto. Guess what the name of their group is? They're not crypto.
Of course not. I don't know.
They're Fair Shake. What kind of name is that? Without any. idea that the money goes back to crypto. And who's crypto now? Is it the one idiot's in jail, so it can't be him, freed. Right? So these guys, they didn't do very well. They spent $10 million in opposition to Lieutenant Governor Stratton, who ended up winning, the Democratic Senate primary, and they spent $2.5 million against Ford in the 7th district to replace retiring. And Ford won, and so did Stratton. So they're $12.5 million out the bank, right?
I have a question. Who's Joe Kernan?
Joe Kernan.
That's what it says. President Trump to Joe Kernan. We are very intent on making.
That's
a
Joe
deal.
Kernan right there. Oh, he's a buddy of Trump's. He's actually interviewed Trump on CNBC a couple times.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. So he called Joe Kernan up to give him the. The heads up, did Joe Kernan get a trade down?
I don't know. Maybe Hannity did.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, I'm surprised because usually he goes to Hannity first.
It says here Fair Shake did spend $817,000 against state. Now, a lot of this negative stuff bothers me even more than being for somebody. State Senator Robert Peters in the 2nd District to replace outgoing U.S. Representative Robin Kelly. But Peters finished a distant enough third. Behind Miller and Jackson Jr. to question how much these dollars affected the outcome. Obviously, they didn't do very well. AIPAC, on the other hand, under the names of... AIPAC has five PACs that they're supporting, none of which the name AIPAC. I'm going to say if AIPAC is supporting somebody, I'm voting against them. Same way with Pritzker. If he's doing negative ads on somebody, I'm voting for the guy. So how does this help, Jimmy? How does this help anybody able to do this if you can even disguise who's doing it and your money is so big? At least put your name up there. Have some stones, for God's sake.
No.
Where's the group that, five PACs related to AIPAC tried to influence five congressional races. The group saw two victories, Donna Miller in the 2nd and Bean in the 8th. The groups fared worse in the 9th, spending money to harm. They spent $600,000 to harm Kat Abu-Male's chances. How do you spend $600,000 against somebody and not identify yourself?
The same way you can spend $5 million and not identify yourself.
And they spent a bunch of money to boost Laura Fine, and they both lost. Evanston Mayor Daniel Biss won instead. But now that's another story. because he only won with like 28% of the vote, which is even more bizarre in my regard. Let me see what the name of these the groups. Affordable Now, Affordable Chicago Now, spent $4.4 million supporting Miller in the 2nd District. Chicago Progressive Partnership. These are all APAC groups. Chicago Progressive Partner. Would you expect that there would be some Jewish group? Spent $266 in opposition to something in the 9th. Elect Democratic Women Action Fund. This is another one. Spent $500,000 supporting Fine in the 9th District. Elect Chicago Women. Spent $5.8 million supporting Fine. So they got two different groups supporting this Fine lady, and it's all the same money. So it makes it look like all kinds of people are supporting her, and it was just one person or one group. Mm. Which is really, you know, Elect Chicago Women is another one. I mean, here's the United Democracy Project. Spent $5 million in 7th race, mostly in support of Connors Irvin, but also $60,000 against Friedman. This against stuff, you think the Supreme Court actually thought that some outside group using a fake name would be spending $1 million or $600,000 saying something against people they can't even prove, they can't get sued, they can't, you know, no libel charges. Mm. I don't see how if Matt Byrne is here, if I'm running against Matt and we say bad stuff about each other, I guess that's just bare knuckle politics. But if another group comes out and says bad stuff against Matt and it's not even true, how's that not libel?
The We Love Chicago group.
Yeah. Yeah, We Love Chicago group. Enough to do God knows what.
Morning, Tom.
How are you, John? Pile in on this.
Isn't this the same sort of thing that, you know, gets my dad up? You know, when you get a phone call and it says unavailable, the caller ID, and it's, you know, somebody harassing you or some fake fraud thing or an IRS fraud, whatever else, and you can sequester the, you know, location that call is coming from, and, you know, but it takes up your time to deal with, to answer it if you want to answer it. I don't think the founding fathers ever, you know, imagined something like that could happen, where your space or time could be invaded with you know, fraudulent attempts to take money from you and not identify at the very least who they are.
By the way, did you and
that level of secrecy is you know, protected, it seems, by the FCC. And, you know, no reason why it has to be, why there should be spoofing of numbers or anything else, but it's just become, you know, laughably.
Did you or the other believers of the Trump group get the heads up this morning on his 700-point move in the NASDAQ?
Oh, was it 1,100 for the Dow? I just saw.
Yeah. Why didn't you get the heads up? You guys are supporters.
Yeah. Well, I'm not on his short list anyway.
His
long list.
You know. Why not? I mean, you know. Especially if you've done the trades through us, we'd have made 2 cents, and you'd have made $10 million, it'll be okay.
That's not how things work for me, Tom.
So why is that?
I'm not the kind of quid pro quo I'm used to. So.
Why are people true believers of any of these people, any side, when they're not part of any of the scam?
Well, I think they feel so betrayed by the other side. One thing.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you're in the middle like me, you feel so betrayed by both sides. I don't see, I can't pick one against the other.
Speaking of betrayal, I mean, today's Sun-Times, this is for the first time ever that I know of, their headline is about the murder of the Loyola student, you know, Sheridan Gorman, and it identifies, you know, the accused murderer as being a Venezuelan migrant. They don't say Venezuelan illegal immigrant. It sometimes hasn't gotten to that point yet, but this is the first time ever they've gone to that extreme.
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with printing the truth.
Well, and this is the same paper that last week had as its headline, Wrong Place, Wrong Time, about Sheridan Gorman.
Right, so,
and the family complained about it.
Okay, so we're going to have...
But this, you know, this is the kind of betrayal I'm talking about. You know, you never get the kind of, you know, defense of common sense, even in newspaper headlines anymore. When it happens, I'm just totally shocked. It's like, is this the same Sun-Times I've been trying to hack my way through for the last...
All right, so there's going to be 600 murders in Chicago this year, and two of them are going to be from people who are illegally?
Two of them?
How many do you think there are?
What? Well, I'd say over how many years? You know, 200,
I'm talking 2000? About this, I'm talking
who would care in the media here, Tom?
Well, I got one for you. Talk about close to home. My nephew lives in, I don't know if it's a, where is he? He's between Western and Kedzie and like 110th Street. Now, is that, that's not Mount Greenwood yet, is it? I thought Mount Greenwood was the other side of Kedzie, whatever it is.
He's the other side of train tracks there, with Grand Trunk.
Yeah, so he's not. He's between.
So he's
between the train tracks. Anyway, so the guy next door, I think they heard this. He lives next door to the guy. My niece lives, like, rents a spot for him there. He's got a nice house, keeps it up. Suddenly, the guy kills his mother, breaks her back. It's the murder. So police show up. Then he went out with like an axe and started chopping one of the trees in the parkway. And it turns out the father had died like a short time ago, I'm going to say a couple of months. And the story was that he fell. Well, it turns out the guy killed the father too. So they arrest him. And I don't know if it was on the news or what. And they didn't put him in jail. They put him in some kind of a psych ward, wherever the hell that is. My nephew comes home Saturday. The guy's up on the roof and come down and starts watering his grass. He's out. How they claim they don't have enough evidence yet. They're still working on it to put him in.
Well, you couple that with sanctuary policies. You know, for
sanctuary
people.
This guy's been here. He was born here.
I'm just saying you couple that kind of, you know, criminal justice system with a sanctuary policy that, you know, welcomes people and protects them and supports them.
Why
people have no business being?
Why
here.
Is it that we can
and
talk?
And then they hide the crimes these people commit. So
I don't know if they do that at all, but they hide the crimes every day.
Come on.
Well, Jan, you know, you if you believe the drivel from one side or the other, all you're doing is being in an echo chamber. I mean, the idea that all of a sudden these people are—they're here illegally, so they're all criminals. Well, guess what?
They are criminals, Tom. Nobody ever able to say it. It's the same thing with Brandon Johnson saying, "Don't demonize our children." You can't even criticize people who were or everything else. They treat migrants and sanctuary people the same.
I don't think you know anybody who's much more law and order than me. I'm saying, but don't define one group and say, "Well, they're criminals." Well, so are all the other people. I mean, what is supposed to happen if we went back and did a full audit of everybody's tax return in the last 10 years? How many criminals would we find?
We don't have to go that far.
Well, I'm saying, no, we don't want to go anywhere near me.
No, but if we had some control over who we let into this country and how we treat them
why do you...
And what we don't do that we would do to the average citizen, that I just kind of, you know, wash my hands of the whole thing. I feel totally betrayed. You talk about people being so, you know, driven to one side that they can't see the other side. It's because they've been blindsided every time they try to see it somebody else's way, because they don't get any credit for it. They don't give it any respect.
Well, I know I don't get any credit for it. I guarantee you that, bud. But I mean, look at the chicane. Look at the amount of money being stolen in Washington. One or two of those people out there are stealing more than any one of these, all these illegal people combined.
Tell that to the Minneapolis people, Tom.
Well, it's
how many billions do you want to settle on?
Okay, here? But who steals the dough there? It's the hospital chains, it's the doctors, and probably not even the doctors. It's the drug
companies. It's the politicians, Tom. Politicians are the ones stealing. That's what's going on in Minneapolis. That's what's going on in Washington.
They're not. When somebody treats 10 people a day, or when you get a place in the total red state of Mississippi where all kinds of people in one county are all on long-term disability, I don't think the politicians get a piece of that.
Oh, come on!
Well, what do they?
You don't think Tim Walz is getting a piece of what's been happening?
No, I mean, this whole idea we blame everything on. Do you think that the senator of Mississippi in that district where some huge percentage of people are on disability, mostly because they are on disability, there's something wrong with them? They all have a job where they got bad backs when they're 40 or 50. So do you think the senator is getting a piece of that check? Come on!
I do.
No, they're not.
I don't know which particular ones, but I do.
Well, you think a senator gets a piece of somebody's Social Security check?
No, but they get the benefit of supporting or overlooking that kind of fraud because it translates to support.
I I don't know that it may or may not, but the point being is that...
Well, it does, Tom. We have California. Look, there's no way this stuff could continue at such an extreme level unless it has been green light by people who know all about it and do not want to cross the people who are benefiting from it.
And you know my solution to it, which will never happen.
Look at Chicago. It's the same thing.
I know. And you know my solution to it, which will never happen. You need somebody who is morally somewhat together, not anybody we have now, surely in the White House, to say, this is going to stop. And it's going to stop on this time frame. Take your noisy-ass car that you spent a bunch of money in to make it noisy. You got 3 months to make it unnoisy again. You got 3 months to make your windows that are all blackened out against the law to unblacken them. Here's such and such a date. We're pulling you over, and there's no excuses. And if somebody says, what about the black people? What are you saying, the black people can't read? They can read. We'll put some signs. And same thing with taxes. Same thing with same thing with hospitals. Same thing with company. Somebody has to become the moral force. Who's that somebody going to be? I can't name anybody. So right now we've disintegrated into, if you're not cheating, you're not trying on just about any level. In my industry, if you're not front-running something, you know, I mean, if you're not looking at somebody's order before you trade it, that kind of stuff. And this morning, how many people do you think made a fortune on this, John? This announcement. Why do you think it happened? If they've been talking for 2 days, why didn't it happen yesterday morning? Why did we wait till the market was already open? So somebody could get in there earlier, right? I mean, really? This announcement, the trading didn't start till 5 o'clock last night. At 4:30 last night, Trump could have said this. The market would have opened up. Why did it have to trade down all night for some people to get long? Now, okay, that doesn't mean that somebody here illegally and is a crook and is doing bad stuff shouldn't be arrested, but that's... They didn't... More money was lost here this morning by people than those people were making in the next year. And, you know, where are we? Why couldn't President Trump have made this announcement last night at 4:30 before the market's open? He says he's been doing it for 2 days. It wasn't like it just happened.
I think he's got political reasons for doing everything he does.
Political or cash.
Saying, Tom, when has it never been a consideration when you make an announcement? I mean, the Brits lied about the death of their king because they didn't want the tabloid newspapers to scoop
death
the
of their
London
king.
Times. So.
King. When did Charles die? Is he dead?
Our current Charles?
Well, they haven't had a king in 90 years. I mean, a queen.
What are you getting at? I'm not sure.
You said they lied about the death of their king. What?
Yeah, King George VI in 1936.
That was kind of before our time.
But I'm just saying, this is primitive newspaper time, and they put every bit of importance on who got the scoop to the point of maybe even hastening the death of the king.
Did they trade futures in the middle of the night back then? I don't think so.
Well, if they could have, they would have.
Yeah, but... God,
and they would have been just as crooked as we are today. Then, so
God, well, did you watch?
Saying, there's nothing particularly new about this. Strategizing when you announce something and what you've got to announce.
So you think you're
you have to tell everybody as soon as he knew something was in, and then have it blow up at the last minute. No, I'd sit.
If I was confident that Pam Bondi was dutifully going through all the trades between the opening last night and this morning to find out if anybody in the White House or anybody close to these people had made a trade. If I knew she was doing that, I wouldn't worry about it. But I know she's not doing that. Wouldn't think of doing that. Just saying. So are you watching any of the games?
George VI died in 1952.
Well, George V. Pardon me. George V, the father.
You're talking about the what was his name? What was the guy's name who was the who abdicated?
That's Edward VIII.
That was Edward.
Yeah, son of George V. Yeah, and then Elizabeth's father was the second son or third son of George V. It was George V I meant to refer to. That was my mistake.
Okay.
Well, what's her name? Did a nice job for, 80 years? You imagine driving to Seattle with her in a car, what you could have learned about all these people?
Very cautious what she told anybody, though.
Probably, but man,
that's what distinguished her. That's what sets her apart from everybody else in that family, right?
Wouldn't you like to be Spock and do the mind meld on her before she croaked? Oh. Can you imagine what she knew about Churchill and Roosevelt and all these people?
Well, I would not want to have been her I couldn't have carried it with as much dignity or discretion as she did. You know, when you look at what's been going on, you know, since she left this world.
Well, she was a stern lady. Nobody misbehaved that much when she was there.
No.
I mean, she was a. You know, it's funny.
I mean, the Epstein thing got out of control with Andrew while she was still alive, and what she knew or could have done about it at that point, I don't know. I don't think she could have said much publicly without making herself look bad.
Are you somewhat surprised of the vitriol people are going against Chavez when the Epstein people are still in hiding?
No, but the fact that it took 60 years for this news to come out and the timing.
How long does it? Can I give us a? I remember him when I was a lot younger. What time frame are we talking about here? I don't really know that
this
much about
this. The 60s. You know, he was closely allied with RFK, and he had campaigned. this is you know, the 68 presidential campaign.
Okay.
He was already very much in, you know, in the front pages in California and nationally.
But it was he tried to unionize migrant workers, right? Was that the story?
Right. American farm workers, right. Which was unprecedented at the time. You know, this was the most, you know, abused kind of, you know, important, you know, union, potential union group that had no real representation, and he became, you know, kind of a savior to them. Had tremendous, you know, prestige because of it. But you know what he didn't go along with, Tom, was, you know, open immigration, illegal immigration, and that's, I really think, why now they have to trash his reputation. Because he would not have been on board, or wasn't on board with sanctuary policies or, you know, open borders, catch and release, all this kind of stuff. He was vehemently opposed to that. And I think the only way the left now can deal with somebody like him is to destroy him.
Well,
and they're doing a pretty good job. It's like they're already taking down stuff in Chicago about him. So.
Yeah, so what happens if something goes wrong with you? We got to take down Flanagan Way in Beverly, or what?
Well, it's all about... This is what the Bolsheviks did, Tom. You know, the first thing you do is you got to destroy all the statues of the most respected people in the nation's tradition, and you know, demonize them, and you know, abuse their religious, you know, idols and everything else, and then you substitute new ones. You know, you take down Christopher Columbus, put up somebody else nobody had heard of.
What do you think of your boy going on a gold coin?
Which
Trump,
boy?
Trump.
Oh. Tell me, I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, he wants, they just, he ran through, they're going to strike a gold coin with his picture in it.
Hmm. A lot of presidents on coins, they usually are dead first.
Yeah, it's usually their idea. you couldn't write fiction like this, but I like the part where the guy who had the best thing going was Stalin, where if he wiped somebody out, didn't he have a group of, Jimmy, we talked about this one day, didn't he have like 50 people, the best photography people, the best artists, they could wipe you totally out of history.
They had armies of people that would go into the libraries,
yeah,
and take the dictionary, you know, the encyclopedias off the stage, and when somebody off the shelf, and when anybody got discredited or was, you know, reduced to ash or whatever they did with them, they would go in and rip the pages out of the encyclopedias that referred to that person and substitute new ones about totally innocuous subjects.
Well,
in the right alphabetical order.
Well, Jimmy does that here. Like, if we ever decide we don't like you, your Stacks and Jacks, all of a sudden you were never there. All your shows get everything.
Exactly. I scrub the internet of all all references to certain people that are bad Stacks and Jacks.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the Soviets had this. They really did have an army of people doing just that kind of.
Kathy Durbin, she used to. I don't know. Kathy had an amazing ability to. She used to help us out a lot with the show until she moved out and started working a different place. But terrific lady. But she almost was like you, Jan, in the sense that she would research all this stuff, and she was the one who was giving me all this stuff about Stalin. Right? She sends me this picture, and there's a picture where these guys are all, there's a Russian river. And there's like eight guys all spread out.
Oh yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
Yeah, but the one guy's leaning up against.
One is gone. Yeah.
Yeah, and all of a sudden the next one, the guy's gone. But the thing is, the dude was standing right next to the rail by the river. Well, the next picture, the other guy's leaning up against the rail. Somehow they maneuvered the other guy to not just the guy be gone, like there's somebody not there. They actually moved the other guy over somehow and had him leaning up against the rail. I'm going, how do they do that? You know, obviously there's people who could do that.
When it was of such critical importance, you'd be surprised with what they could do, but, even back then, let alone what they could do now.
Well, yeah, that was before like AI, you know, and
Photoshopping per se. It was a version of Photoshopping.
By the way, I had some bizarre thing on YouTube, and I'm listening to it, and I sent it off to our guys Wayne and Andrew. I go, could this possibly be true? There's something way on a wacky left. And Andrew writes back. He goes, "What are you doing? Can't you see that's AI?" And he gave me all the little tells where you could. Turns out it was all fake.
Yeah,
but he picked it up right away.
Have you caught? I mean, there are like YouTube channels that look legit if you just are looking at the thumbnails. You're kind of cute with watching other stuff. But there's the one with it features Elon Musk as the only person talking. And then there's another one that featured, several that feature Victor Davis Hanson of the Hoover Institution, who has his own, podcast on the Daily Signal, but the internet is awash in fake videos of Victor Davis Hanson, totally AI produced. And you have to look carefully. Some of these things have this, the similar titles. It looks like a slightly different background, but the same AI-generated face and mouth movements and sound and voice and everything else, and they're almost convincing. I mean, I didn't
notice anything, dummy that I am, and Wayne picked it up right away. What are the tells? You just got to see it.
Well,
the
Elon Musk one is the clumsiest one, where the camera angle is constantly like going back from left to right and back again. And no matter what the time of day the thing was produced, or no matter what version of it you're seeing, or what the name of the episode is, the background is always lit exactly the same. So sometimes you have to look at a couple of these things to see that there's not enough room for what would be inevitable variation if you're in a real room and not just something that's been staged to the utmost. There's one I saw, a guy named David Whitmore. I don't know if you've seen this guy. I started getting a suggestion of his videos, and I thought, who is this guy? He's always dressed identically. He's always speaking in the same monotone voice. He doesn't seem to move his head. I mean, he moves his eyes naturally enough, and he speaks
like Clutch Cargo, only his jaw moved?
Yeah, yeah. But then you go on, I thought, well, I'm just going to poke around and see who this guy is. And there's a Wikipedia entry, of course, and he is a political commentator, perhaps AI generated. I thought, well, that's enough. I'm not watching that.
Well,
even Wikipedia wouldn't tell you for sure if it is.
John, when I start berating Trump's timing on this, okay, I'm doing it for several reasons. One is everybody knows that I traded for 20 years on the trading floor, where you opened at 9 and then you opened at 8:30 and you closed at 3, and that's the only time you can make a trade. So in my view of the world, the trading is more legit when people on both sides are somewhat informed. And since you trade with another person, a market maker like me is only there, the long version is, for momentary discrepancies in supply and demand. In other words, take soybeans, for instance. If you have soybeans, your natural buyers are going to be your people that make cornflakes, basically, right? They're going to want to buy soybean futures because they want to lock in their price for October, so they know what they're doing. They're making cornflakes. They can have some certainty going forward as what their price of their product is. Now, the natural sellers are the farmers. Okay, I planted my soybean crop. I'm going to hedge some of it. I can't hedge all of it in case I get hail over my place, but I'm going to sell my beans at, pick a number, $15, which is fine with me, and we're all good to go, and that way I'm locked in. But in the meantime, every minute the trade comes down there to buy or sell, there's not going to be a cereal company or a farmer that happens to have an order in the pit, even though those people drive the market up and down in terms of the price. Somebody there is making a market, quarter or half type of thing. So any time you want, you can make a trade. Well, the system, when I was in the business and I traded in the OEX pit, which I think was probably the single straightest contract ever traded, was 60-some percent of all the trades were customer to customer. And people want to drive the hours of trade further and further to where everybody trades like with a firm, where somebody gets to see your order coming. There's not really all these market makers. There's still some, okay, but it's not near as liquid as you would like it to be. So if the market still started at 8:30 and you couldn't make a trade, and Trump said what he said at 8 o'clock, everybody had a chance to digest it, and you had an opening, I have no problem with it whatsoever, because obviously news comes out of Washington. The guy's the president. He's going to make news. That's kind of what he's there for, duh. But this, when you start adding them together, when you find a time where nobody's really trading, I mean, right now S&Ps are up 79. So I'm going to say that entire was up 179 after the news came out. That entire 100 points maybe wouldn't have happened if he'd have waited till 9 o'clock. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying he shouldn't say what he's saying. He's talking to Iran.
Does that mean then that he should wait till 9 o'clock?
I think
just to placate the markets?
What I'm saying is the markets should not have these half-ass off-hours trading, I don't think, because...
Well, that's the problem.
Well, okay, but now to take advantage of it, if you want to be a scumbag, you know that it's going to drive it more in those off hours. It's like if somebody front runs somebody did this a few years ago. One of those Fed guys gave a speech in China. All of a sudden, you had this huge move at 2 a.m. Well, what are you doing? Give the speech when the market's open, for God's sake. Say,
doesn't it work the other way too, Tom? Where they withhold stories that are sensitive or embarrassing or humiliating.
If I didn't count on these people, my point is, John, is if the markets were not open until everybody was awake and involved, it wouldn't make any difference. I'm not saying Trump should hang on to something.
Right, and I certainly don't say that either.
But the fact is, are the markets going to change?
Okay,
right, what I'm saying, my point here is simple. If there's sleazebags in the White House that are trading ahead of this crap, which I absolutely convinced there are, they get a bigger kick before the market opens than after, is my point. So,
if you presume there are crooks, it's not just in the White House.
Who's closest to it?
I'm just saying when you presume anything, Tom, you need it's more than a presumption, though.
I've been watching this stuff all day long, and every time there's
movement. It's easy then for you to jump to the, well, somebody must have benefited from it.
Sure they must have. Well, absolutely.
To kick somebody or whatever. So I'm just saying that's kind of an easy paper chain of stuff, but it doesn't...
I know nobody's investigating it.
Well, maybe you should.
Well, how am I going to do that?
Well, precisely.
Well, I mean, the 9/11 fiasco. My buddy Dr. J, John Nigerian, had a system where they traced all these option trades. So John was on CNBC and he goes, you know, all these people traded puts 2 days before it happened. Yes, I took a couple of phone calls because John was in here in the office with me. I took a couple of phone calls in the SEC. Hey, yeah, this is like Joe from the SEC. And I go, okay, it's me. Well, you know, where did he get this information? I said, you know, I mean, it's not up to me to answer his questions. But this is all public record. I mean, what do you... We can't find any of these people.
They know exactly who was shorting the United Airlines stock.
Sure,
they
do.
They know exactly what was going on.
And they're the right people. They're the right people. They're not you and me.
People in Israel knew what was going on October 7th, too.
Well,
the stock market shows it, okay. And it's traced to
all right. Now, when you say the people of Israel, the normal stiff in Israel.
I'm just saying the traders, the short sales on stuff in Israel on October 7th.
Okay, careful when you say the trader. I'm a trader. I never had the information. I'm the guy who got stuffed.
I'm not saying it's information available to anybody, but it is available to people who can be identified.
But they don't.
Because they acted in response to something nobody else knew about.
Well,
they have foreknowledge of it.
Matter of fact, the SEC guy says
that. You have to presume somebody, and it isn't like these people are just mysterious entities. Everybody could find at some level who these people were that were benefiting from these
trades. No. John, you see, you know, we had a guest on the score, John and I, and the guy said something about, well, we can't find these people. And I said, you know, and I of course rear up and I go, wait a minute. I said, I own a brokerage firm. Every person here, if that trade were to come through here, everybody's got a name, everybody's got a bank account. And if it's a CMTA trade, which means we flip it to somebody else, we know whose account we flip it to. People don't do that anymore. But People you can flip it to somebody else. Eventually, someplace, if it traces back to Europe, somebody has an account. How can you not trace it? Oh, man, we can't find these guys. What do you mean you can't find them? You don't want to find them. Now, granted, if it came from Europe through this, through that, and flipped to another firm, it might be a little more difficult. But, Jan, follow the money. The money had to come from somebody, right?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, anybody who'd want to do that as a full-time job could probably identify it, and you'd never get any press coverage.
So without accusing anybody, what I'm saying is if the market was still like it was, where all the participants were there, okay, an announcement from the president, which the president is going to make, is not going to be as, well, right now we're up 73 instead of 173. Probably if the market was open, we'd have been up 125, not 175. Saying the lack of players when you're still open like this makes things, it accentuates the move. And people benefit from that, and some people don't. You know, that's a problem. So
well, who in the market is in a position not to manipulate it like you're accusing the White House of doing?
In our building, there's probably a couple of schmucks in this building that actually make a market in the futures overnight. They might be two up, they might be one up, they might be three up. They just got drilled for 100 and some points, yeah? They're just making a market. They're not privy to the news. The S&P futures right now are 66.42. Right? They're 40.
But how many movers and shakers, whatever, can, you know, manipulate the timing of information on whatever subject, on whatever company, on whatever geopolitical issue of the day, and not screw somebody and benefit somebody at the same time? Is there any movement that's tied to politics
it's
immune from that kind of
it's a matter of degree.
Can't you say this about anything at all?
The whole idea of it, Jan, is we know you want a free flow of information, and somebody's always going to get a little something first before the next guy. I mean, you know that, right? So what you want is somebody asked Milton Friedman in class one day, he says, what do you think about insider trading? He goes, I don't even worry about it. Now, why did he say that? He said that because in those days, in the OEX pit, somebody had to come in and from a brokerage firm and had to make a trade. He had to do an open outcry. Everybody heard it. Everybody knew who the guy was. So if it was, you know, Flanagan Inc., and every single time IBM's earnings came out, John Flanagan came in and made the proper trade 2 seconds before anybody else, it'd be pretty quick to know that your customer knew those earnings before anybody else. Okay, so in that world, you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. But now that world is not like that. In the middle of the night, somebody puts in an order, nobody knows who he is. You don't get to see the whites of his eyeballs like he used to. So it's in this electronic, very... You and I are right. If you want to, if somebody investigates, could you find out who that person was? The answer is yes. But the person who's sitting here, two up on the futures, has no idea that he's just getting taken down. He's gonna trade at 6600 and the next trade's gonna be 6650. He has no idea that's going to happen. But now, if it was a pit and somebody walked in, immediately, if it was Goldman or Goldman Sachs, everybody basically grabs her behind and goes, all right, why all of a sudden? And if two firms ran in, I didn't need to, in the OEX pitch, I didn't need to watch TV. If all of a sudden three brokers ran in with green on top, which meant they were buyers, something happened in the world. I just didn't know what, but I knew something did. Just the flow was information. But now it's in the middle of the night. Nobody knows who we're doing what. There's a few people trying to make markets, and all of a sudden they get run over by 150 points. It's a whole different program. Now my point is isn't there
an easy solution to that, though?
I think that we should only have trading during the training when most people are there.
I would agree. So wasn't the system though changed to allow or even to encourage the kind of manipulation that you're condemning?
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, but obviously, the markets are so big now, you can't have people walking in with orders. You can't have runners. I mean, most of it has to be somewhat electronic, but it doesn't have to be invisible. It also could have been inclusive instead of exclusive. It's designed for just what I'm talking about in mind. Why do you think there's payment for order flow? because people, their job now is not to get you the best fill. It's to sell your order to the guy who pays the most. That's a wholly a total different dynamic, right? It's one's not the same at all. I mean,
I think the markets could fix this.
Oh, what do you mean the markets could fix this? People love it like this. Some do.
Well, then here's what we're dealing with. I mean, it won't just be Trump or other governments or anybody else using the clock, to maximize hurting somebody or helping somebody. This is why wouldn't you if the system permits this?
Well, okay. Well, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. That's what I think we're seeing all over the place, right?
Hey, is it cheating or is it just
trading on things
that the market seems to be oblivious to?
Trading on an insider information is absolutely illegal.
Well, how's the trading? I mean, he didn't release the information until there were already consequences.
He has the invite. If he or somebody around him traded before he made the announcement, that's insider trading. Stone cold. If the CFO of IBM makes a trade before he announces the earnings, it's insider trade. Duh.
Well,
what's the difference?
Show me the people who do it. We can talk.
Well, okay. And we back up into this. We only go after Denver. Anyway, what do you think of the all these people with the fake names and who's influencing these elections? I'm appalled by this. You and I talked about it a little bit yesterday.
Well, first of all, if you had a Pritzker-based, PAC or whatever that was financing, and the negative stuff on Krishnamurthy or the pro stuff on Julianna Stratton, and if you had to put his picture in the bottom of the TV screen for the millisecond while the commercial was running, half of the people who saw it wouldn't even notice it. Pritzker was there, unless they had a banner headline, which they're not going to do, saying this. So it's the television advertising, where most of this money seems to have been spent, permits.
Yeah, it was all over radio, but radio's pretty cheap.
Well, yeah, even there's even less. they'll speed it up and play it so fast nobody can decide.
But they, at the end of them, they always say,
Yeah, but usually at top speed, Tom. You ever notice that it's like the tape all of a sudden speeds up?
You have to do that when we do commercials for PTI.
Yeah, they have to do it, yeah. Because they don't want you to hear that.
Well, you can't be egregious on it. For instance, if we were to have an option commercial, which we never do, there's all kinds of things you have to do about options. There has to be options or not for everybody, blah, blah, blah. We need a risk disclosure document, blah, blah. So whenever PTI runs a commercial, we talk about risk, we talk about things like that. We never actually talk about options, and that's the reason. But so the full download of the crap, you got to say, or whatever, I won't say it's crap, but is probably 15 seconds out of your minute commercial. Now, what you can do is you can speed that up. If I were to say options are not for everybody and blah, 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 please, call in. I've used the notice verbatim. Call your broker, and or we will send you characteristics and risks of individual options if you call this number. I can speed that up to where it only takes 12 seconds. I can't speed it up to where you're like cousin it, to where it's 2 seconds and you can't understand a word I'm saying, or else Finn would be all over us, and rightfully so. In other words, I can speed it up some as long as you can still understand it. But I can't. Remember, cousin it. What did he just say? You can't do that. I mean, nobody would do. I mean, somebody might. We would never do that. But to speed it up a couple of seconds, as slow as I talk, I mean, that's okay as long as you can understand it. But I mean, I honestly think that if you were to, as much as people might like Pritzker, or some people do, if you had him out there bashing John Flanagan and saying what a crook he was and he took money from ICE agents or some crap, and I were to say, this thing, at the end of your commercial, if it's yours, you'll see Stratton or somebody say, this commercial was for, and me, Julia Stratton, I approve of this ad. Others, they'll say, the person is not involved with the ad and doesn't approve of it. Okay, but if you were to say, you talk about Raja taking money from, you know, ICE agents or whatever the hell he said about him. If he was saying about him that this thing is paid for and designed by Governor Pritzker, I'll tell you, I think Raja would have won. Because I don't think anybody feels that he should be doing that. I don't.
Well, I'd say what it's more likely to do, Tom, and this is also part of their strategy, is to depress voter turnout. Yeah, I mean, it may translate into, oh, God, I can never, I'll vote for Juliana Stratton now, of course. But, you know, that isn't really the goal of a lot of this negative advertising, is to make people say, I'm not going to vote for any of these assholes.
Well,
and they don't vote, or they leave that blank on their ballot. This is exactly what somebody who wanted to manipulate election results would want to do, is first depress the turnout.
Well, no,
because then you can get all sorts of stuff later on. Where
why
you
would you not want to depress the turnout if anybody's going to vote against you? Talk about human nature.
Well, because if they can control the counting of the ballots, which is also part of the problem in the state, and the speed with which stuff gets reported, you can hide crookedness more easily with low turnout than with a big turnout of vote.
Well,
it's harder to manipulate. You can't keep up with
Well, the biggest vote getter in the state is Juliana Stratton, and that was the biggest race, obviously. She gets 484,000. Raja gets 399. Robin Kelly gets 218. Who's Kevin Ryan? He got 59. I don't know who that is. Other candidates get 44. All right, so she gets 40%. You know what the 484, you know what percentage that is of the people who actually could vote, not that are registered
to vote? It's only 25%, isn't it?
No, of the people who actually could vote, it's less than 5.
Oh, yeah, her actual tally.
Yeah, because Illinois has, what was it, 6 point? I just had these things on the top of my tongue. There are like 7 million people that are registered to vote. And Illinois has 76% of the people who could be registered to vote are registered to vote. So if you divide 7 million or whatever it was by 0.76, you get like 8.8 people that actually could vote, right? And she got 484,000, so that's 5%. So you wonder why your government, I'm not saying that if one person, you know, somebody's going to sit there, what's this chief guy telling me, if I got off my dead ass and voted, it would have made a difference. No, we know that. It wouldn't have made a difference. But when you start getting down to 25%, now you get into some of these races for the House. Let's see. Democratic primary, blah, blah, blah. Where are we here? District 4. Where's the one where, what's her name, Fine was in? What's the Evanston district, Jan? I'll find it here.
That was the 2? Was that the second district?
Kowski's
old seat?
No, 2 is... Donna Miller beat Jesse Jackson after crypto people gave Jesse... Now, this is interesting. Maybe you can... And this one, instead of just disparaging Democrats, you can... crypto gave a bunch of money to this guy's brother in the last election, and that put him over the top against our girl, Karen... what the hell is
Karen
the
Reeves, huh?
Karen Reeves. And it worked for them. Now, this time, it didn't. I mean, he lost pretty bad to this Donna Miller, but now I don't know her at all. But there still is all kinds of people in this thing. But the one I'm looking at is this one up in Evanston, where hell's the one? Well, LaShawn Ford. They also put a bunch of money against us. They did negative money against LaShawn Ford, and they still won. Is that a guy or a girl? LaShawn, is it a lady?
Yes.
But here's the part I have issues with this one. Now, this is number 7. God, she gets 24% of the vote. Why doesn't Illinois have runoffs like Georgia?
Well, they don't have partisan elections. This is a partisan primary, so
yeah, they do. They ran off. They had somebody ran off. Okay, the one they ran off in Georgia was a full election, not a primary.
Well, the same thing in Texas. I mean, with the senatorial. I mean, they had this was. Yeah, I don't know what Texas primary law. That well, but there was a runoff because nobody got 50%. But in a partisan election in this state, you know, no, there's no, it's so it, like in the mayoral election, yes, you know, if you don't get 50% of the vote, it'll go to the runoff. That's how we got Brandon Johnson. That's how we got Lori Lightfoot.
So. Oh yeah, well, but look, this
was a partisan primary, so you know, it's you know, whoever has the plurality. So
how come I don't see your name on here? Look at this. This is a what the hell district is this? This is District 7. I'm not so sure where that is. So LaShawn Ford wins 23,000 votes. Melissa Conyers Irvin has 20. So she's pretty close. Anthony Driver has 11. Keena Collins has 9. Thomas Fisher has 7,200. Who are these people? Jason Friedman gets 7,100. Annabelle Mendoza gets 5,200. Reed Showalter gets 42. Who are all these other people? Some of these guys they need more signatures than they're getting votes. Rory Haskins, 1,800. Why do they vote? And who votes for them? I mean, was it is it people in their block or what?
It's very hard to say. Who's a spoiler there and who's not? Who's a spoiler for? Because one way if you can manipulate the results in a primary, just throw everybody creation on the ballot, and the person with any name recognition is going to do better than a trail of nobodies, people nobody ever heard of. And this is an old way of mixing things up enough so that somebody who maybe was threatened by some other candidate, that effect can be diluted by loading up a lot of candidates.
If it's
and take that, the opposite side of that, which is what really infuriates me, is how many unopposed races there were at this time. And that's become...
I didn't find too many. I mean, there were four guys ran against Quigley.
Yeah, but I mean, so many. The judicial... None of this stuff... To have somebody unopposed on the ballot is like this, Soviet Union election. Why would I vote for somebody who's... What did that
They're unopposed in the primary.
Nobody else is running against them.
But they're unopposed in the primary. Who's going to run against Alexei Junulius in the primary? Or who's going to run around Maria Pappas? They're both thought to be doing a good job.
Well, the Republicans won't even have candidates.
That's a little weirder, too, but...
Yeah. Could you find any more disincentives to voting than just making the ballot so utterly ridiculous?
Well, I had a lot of the appellate judges were unopposed. Now, that's in the primary, though, right?
And that's by design, too. They don't want no opposition.
Well, but I have a feeling they're going to be opposed in the general, but I don't know.
I doubt it.
But here's the one. APAC spent $600,000 against Kat, what her name is, and they spent a bunch of money to promote this Laura Fine. It's this Daniel Bliss. When you say he won, the guy only got 36,000 votes. It's less than 30%. Kat gets 32, and Laura Fine gets 25. So you get the feeling. And then there's this guy, Mike Simmons, whoever he is, 8,600. Phil Andrew, Bushra Amawala, there's a name, 6,200. Hoan Hun. H-U-Y-N-H, yeah, help me there, mind, 2,100. Patricia Brown and other candidates, 3,600. I'm not saying you shouldn't run if you want to, but how do you, if I ran, where the hell would I get 7,000 people? The people on my two blocks or what? Family and friends?
Where indeed.
This is,
I'm not saying that any of those people...
Wait a minute, here you go. Republican primary, Carl Lambrecht, he's uncontested. It's not just the Democrats.
Oh, I don't think it's just the Democrats by any means. I took a Republican ballot. It's the same problem there.
Yeah, well, there's nobody on it. Who's on your Republican ballot in the city?
Well, they had candidates for senator.
Bill Foster,
governor. They didn't have, when it came to the judicial races and a lot of the down ballot stuff, there were no candidates. It just said no candidate.
Where's District 12? The uncontested Democrat and uncontested Republican. That's surprising. Julie Fortier against Mike Boast. I didn't know, that's interesting, huh?
Well, when you look at the opposed, where there's a number of candidates there, there's PAC money or some kind of, importance to that race that somebody has been asked to run or induced to run to either, make it easier for candidate A or candidate B to squeak past and, in an otherwise, maybe what would be a more difficult race for either one to win clearly. But you muddy the waters enough by throwing candidates into the mix. And
those people are thrown in. I mean, you're talking about the classic case where, this may sound racial, but if a black guy is running against a white guy, both sides trying to get it. If you're the white guy, you're trying another black guy. If you're a black guy, you're trying another white guy to split it up. I mean, we're talking 10 people, though. They can't be doing this with all 10 people. I mean, they all get, like, the same number of votes, 5,000.
But when you look at the signature requirements to even get on the ballot, Tom,
what are
the average person, even if you had sort of a groundswell of support somewhere, you'd have to have, a pretty good operation to get enough signatures to qualify to be on the ballot in the first place, which is already, I mean, you could get people who will do that for you. The machine does it for their anointed candidates. I mean,
John's wife ran for a judge. She did it all herself up on the L platform.
Yeah, and my brother and sister-in-law did that too. But, that is not a recipe for success in Cook County anyway.
Well, where are these upper number, where's District 16? Paul Nolley was uncontested, and Darren LaHood. Darren LaHood, he's the guy who's in there, right? Is it a Republican district?
Yeah, he's the incumbent, right?
Yeah, but I mean, neither one of them are contested. Then there's
the party has tremendous power to get people off the ballot, and just to get people on the ballot if you want to make trouble for some other candidate that they can't control.
Well, here's District 17. I bet this district is Republican. Democratic is uncontested. A guy named Aaron Sorensen. Republican is Dylan Vansil beat Julie Bicklehop. What is her name? 58-41. So I'm thinking, in that district, it's probably Republican. Is it nobody wants to challenge the Republican? So there's some guy ran uncontested. It's not always the guy who's going to win. It could be the guy who's going to lose. It's uncontested, right?
Right.
So what are we down to? We're down to 17 reps, right? Where were we at our top? Were we over 20 at one point, Illinois?
Oh, weren't we 35 at one time?
Well, I don't think it was that money, was it?
I mean, I'm thinking of electoral votes, yeah.
Really?
Now we're going to lose another one. We're going to be down to 18.
We are 18. That's the last district. Okay. Saying,
well, then we'll be down to 17.
You get the same amount of electoral votes as you have districts, right?
Right.
Well, there are 17 districts, District 17. So we're down to being a chump state, basically.
That's why they have to keep redrawing the boundaries all the time.
Well,
when they can't redraw them anymore, then they start whittling away the number.
Well, when I was a lot younger, I won't say a Ute, the guys in my district, I can't remember the other guy's name, it was another Italian name. Marty Russo was our guy, and there's another guy who was the next one over. And that was the thing they combined. And the two guys had to run against each other. Well, they started out as best friends. I think they didn't end that way. And I think Russo lost to the other guy, I forget what his name was. But, yeah.
Was that Ozinga? No.
It was an Italian name. Ozinga. Yeah. Ozinga never. Did Ozinga ever run? We know they own Evergreen Bank.
Maybe that's for the state. I mean, state.
They're still a big operator. I mean, they were. God, I remember when we moved into our house in 1958 and we had concrete for the apron. It was Ozinga showed up. How long ago was that?
I still see their trucks.
Yeah, they're still huge. I got the big thing in near north. And so. John, hey, well, Nancy on in a bit, but what I heard rumors that this 175 West Jackson just got puked out for $30 million. Could that, two questions, could that possibly be true?
Yeah.
Because wasn't the nut was like 175 the bank had? But secondly, if I would have got a bunch, I don't do this, but if I would have got a bunch of Stocks and Jackson PTI people together and came up with 31, would we have had a snowball chance in hell, or is it the 30 going to the right person?
Well, if it's in a foreclosure setting, the lender can bid in, and they can bid it down if they really want the property back. Otherwise, anybody, if they could make the lender whole or satisfy the lender, sure, anybody could go in and do it. The problem then, though, Tom, is assuming you own it, what do you do with it then? Are you going to have to, finagle a major investment to bring this thing back up to rentable space all the way through, or to convert it to something that's more profitable than business space? I just think owning it would be just another kind of.
I'll bet there's enough people in there where the 30's okay.
Yeah, but given the climate of lending now, and getting any kind of development plan. That's going to make
my question was
as profitable as it used to be. I don't know how anybody can swing that.
Well, I mean, there's a number you'll take anything, right?
Yeah, I mean, you'll take it, but what you may lose it then too.
Okay, but I'm saying, just so people know what the hell we're talking about. from what I understand, the people who bought the place paid $200 and some million for it. This is, we were there up until 2020. We were in that building. When I say we, PTI, it's this third biggest building in the city, square footage. It's a full block by block by block by block. It's not as big as, obviously, the Merchandise Mart, and it's not as big as the Sears Tower or the Willis Tower. But I think other than that, it's right up there with anybody else, right?
So, yeah, it's full block.
You know, so
it's got a hollow center, you know, but it's, yeah, still a full
block. Well, they've had, what do they call those things? The people
in
the
court, light courts.
Yeah, they had the light courts. Two of them, actually. One on the north side, one on the south side. And so somebody bought the place years ago, put like $100 million in it back when $100 million was a lot of money. And they actually covered over the light courts, which means they saved a boatload on energy from having all those windows essentially open to the outside. So somebody spent a boatload in this place. Then they sold it. The last iteration, I think somebody bought it for $225, $230, something along those lines. And I believe the note was $175. So we reported on the show, John, what, three, four, it was probably during COVID, the people who paid the money and did some rehab said, we're out, and just kicked it to the bank at $175 or $165 or something. And now, my understanding is if they try to auction out the first, they want the first bid to be their nut, right, their note. Mm-hmm. Well, that didn't happen. Now, my question is, once you get down to taking 30, is it, do we get a spot in that room, John and Chief, and say, we'll pay 32? Or is it going to go to a partner of the bank or the firm or somebody? Is it going to be the thing that sets me up on this, and maybe I'll spend a couple minutes talking about when Nancy comes in, the whole Resolution Trust was a total scam. The people that got the money were able to borrow from the government. They bid ahead of other people, and they were all Bush's buddies. I mean, it was as corrupt as anything you can name on the Democrat side ever. And because one of my clients at the time knew all about every one of the properties in Arizona that went down, and all the people came from Washington. There were people willing to bid more, and they were never able to. So my question is, Jan, if we had a $35 million in your back pocket, could we have found the room where this went down? I'm thinking the answer is no. Just saying. I mean, $30 million seems like
when you see buildings like that going for those prices, that to me shows there's a scarcity of buyers. if there was any developer somewhere who saw a future for this building and say, my God, that's a steal. I could turn this thing around overnight and make it a... Nobody has that kind of vision for these places. So, yeah, maybe if you could, you and I could pull that money together, they'd be glad to sign it over to us and write off the thing and get the hell as far away from it and never touch it again. But what are we going to do with that? And that's the problem.
Well, you know? What I'm saying is, I didn't see anything that said, auction for this building, bid starting at 30.
I mean, if I have to go back and check the ins and outs of what was going on, if it had gone to foreclosure and they got a foreclosure decree and the lender took title to the property and is now, they don't want to own property. This
right.
is not how lenders make money. You know? They would, if they couldn't sell it for less than 30, they would sell it for 30.
My question is to whom? Because one of our buddies who's involved in city politics more than, when the city auctions off these lots for like $100 and something, and I said, by the way, can I get in that room? He goes, no, you can't get in that room. It's a closed group that gets to buy stuff that cheap.
Well, the tax sales were always a closed group. But,
all right, we got to break, Jack, because we'll have Nancy in a second. SP Futures up 103 now. Again, the story has been we were down 50 when we came in. We flipped up 179 when Trump announced that he's been talking to Iran for 2 days. The NASDAQ flipped around from down 150 to up, was up 500 at one point. Now we're up to 390. So it's still a massive move to the upside, but not quite as much as it was. We'll have the whole story when we come back from break.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
With all due respect, what the f*** are you talking about?
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. We got Matt Byrne on the board. S&P futures up 97. They were down when we came in, but now we've turned around the other way. NASDAQ futures up 380, so we're going yes here. Yes, the oil futures, we'll get to those in a second, but the oil futures are down almost $7. The contract is 1,000 barrels, so that's some dough. That's $7,000 on a one lot. That's reasonable. So we got a 10 lot. Mr. Flanagan, he probably bought those when he got the call from the White House, I'm thinking, instead of the futures. So if I asked him if he bought the futures, he could say no, even though he sold oil. Anyway, you got a little deflection. You got to be like Sammy Sosa. No, I did not. I never injected myself with steroids. He never said I didn't take them. He just said I didn't inject himself. There you go. Over in Europe, these guys were way down. Now they're up. DAX up 338, 1.5%. FTSE still down 4. They're non-believers. They'll call that unchanged. CAC around up 85, 1.1. But this will be interesting because last night the Nikkei was down 4. Well, it still is because they closed before this. So they're down 1,800 bucks, which is 3.5%. Ouch. Hang Seng down 894. It's 3.5%. This is back when we were going to start bombing everybody's the Iran electrical plants. So that was still the news last night, and these guys were kind of caught in that side of the news. Shanghai was down 143, 3.5%. So I have a feeling those guys, if this news holds, are going to bounce back pretty big tonight. In a way of review, Friday, S&P was down 100. Ouch. NASDAQ down 443. So we're basically up almost all that in the S&P, not in the NASDAQ, because we're only up 382, so almost the full way, but not quite. Bonds. Interest rates have been going up every single day, damn near, since this Iran thing started. We've got the 10-year is now 4.38, and the 30-year is at 4.94, almost 5%. So we'll have the repercussions of that when we get Nancy. Oil said down 691, now 91.32. Still high, but down a bunch. Brent down 841, 103.78. Natural gas down 12 cents, 292. RBOB is down 18 cents to 310. Okay, now that is the wholesale price of gasoline in New York Harbor. Now, if you have to add to that some transportation, some profit, so say 30, 40 cents, and probably almost a buck in tax most places. So if we stay here, gas prices will probably make it to 450 pretty soon. I paid 420 yesterday, so a little bit behind on that one. Gold down 180 bucks because it is 43.94. Silver down a buck 35, 68.30. Foreign exchange, dollars up a little bit. We got the euros 115.7. British pound 133.9. Crypto up 2,000, 70,371. Boy, Bitcoin's behavior in this whole mess has been kind of weird, but right now it's 70,371. Matt, a lot of stuff. What do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Yeah, a lot of stuff. It is currently 7:37 a.m. on March 23rd, 2026. Weather for Chicago today, 32 at Midway and 30 at O'Hare. Overcast downtown, mostly sunny skies today. High of 41 today and a low of 31 tonight. Over to sports, tonight Bulls play Rockets at 7 p.m. Bulls are at 28 wins to 42 losses this season. Now over to the NCAA men's basketball. Yesterday, winners include Alabama, Arizona, Iowa. They won by a hair, 73-72. Iowa State, Purdue, St. John's, Tennessee, and UConn. Now over to the women's side of things. We saw Duke, Michigan, and North Carolina win. Texas won a big game, 100-58 against Oregon. And similar for LSU, a big win against Texas Tech, 101-47. And a few close games won by Oklahoma, Minnesota, and TCU. Don't forget, of course, that this Thursday is opening day at Wrigley Field. Cubs will play Washington Nationals. So tune in for that.
Our buddy Jim Lawler is going to be going. He can give us a full report.
Well, yeah, that'll be fun to listen back to.
Supposed to be pretty nice though, 65 degrees.
Beautiful weather, perfect for baseball.
Not like today. So, John, do we have Nancy?
Not yet.
She'll. You know, what you were just saying about the 175 West Jackson building, Tom, it looks like it's sold for $41 million. Is that jive with what you saw?
I heard 30, but pretty low. Well,
it's like
a quarter of the note.
Yeah, and it's like an 87%, you know, knockdown from its purchase price in 2018.
Yeah, it was like two thirty or something. And the guy put money into it.
The buyer is, you know, the same bunch that bought the old post office building, and also owns the Aon Center, you know, the old Standard Oil building.
Really?
So that I mean, that's really, I guess, the only buyer who would be in a position to buy and hang on to the thing, who already has, you know, some kind of plan for whatever, you know, assets they've got here. They've got access to capital too, apparently, to do something to bring it back.
Well, somebody already put, right when we were leaving, because we had a really good lease. Talk about a crazy story. We had a really good lease, and they tried to kick us out because they said they got a new buyer. And we said, no. So we ended up going from like office to office for a few years because our lease was so low, and then we finally moved over here. But those guys put $100 million into it back when $100 million was a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
Because the building was, we're talking, well, it had to be 2000 or thereabouts, you know, 2001. The building, for as long as I knew, because I was down here for a while, essentially was gray, you know. And, well, they power washed the whole place. And we're talking a massive building. Turns out the place was white. But I got done power washing it. The stone is spectacular. It was all white, and they spent a fortune on the lobby. Lobby's beautiful. I mean, it wasn't like they didn't put any. They put $100 million in a place, and $100 million was a lot of money. But they foolishly got rid of the really good bar and restaurant was down there. And you know what's weird about the current place? There was finally opened up another bar and restaurant called Pug Mahone's, and one of my friends had an office over there even then, and he. The minute that place closed, they lost like 30% of their people the next year, not having a place to go downstairs and have breakfast or lunch. But here's one I kind of know something about. They had a huge CVS in there that was busy all the time. You know, you could go down there and buy even like little lunch stuff if you wanted to microwave it or something. But they had a gazillion prescriptions because it was right on the way to the Rock Island and the L and everything right on the other side of the building. And I knew the guy was a pharmacist down there. He'd done my stuff forever. Real nice guy. Well, I also knew the building owner or the building manager real well. And those guys, all of a sudden, John, they're gone. So the manager had his locker in the club right next to me. And that guy's name was Sean. It's probably still Sean. I hope he's still with us. So Sean, what's the deal with that place? He goes, well, they had a $17,500 rent. And they were okay with that. You know, per month, and they had, what's the thing where over a period of time, if the taxes go up and something else goes up, your it's not your rent doesn't go up, but that other crap goes up. What do they call that?
Gross
rent. But anyway, yeah. So the other piece, the tax increase and the water increase and all that stuff, was pushing like $15,000. It was almost as much as their rent. So I guess CVS told them, hey, we'll pay that, but you got to knock the rent down. We're not paying 32. And the building said basically up yours. And they, John, they were gone, I'm going to say, on a weekend. They were on Friday. And on Monday, the place was empty. How many aisles, how many stuff, how many little products, how many prescriptions? How do you get all out of that, all out of there in like 2 days? How many people showed up and knew just how to pack the place? They were just gone. But how do you lose leases like that and not? I mean, Excelsior was huge. They got rid of them. And they got rid of Pug Mahone's. Those places on the bottom floor have to be real. Don't you get a lot of money from those places?
Well, and they're, like you said, they're key to people who want to rent space in there,
yeah,
too. But what their absence has done to the city generally, and it's rents that at that point looked like they needed to be jacked up to cope with ever increasing taxes, and the rental market was stretched thin. That goes up and down where they're trying to make ends meet, and then they'll put the squeeze on to other tenants and hope that they can come up with the extra money. If they can't, they just close or move out or whatever else. If anybody had known then what they know now about where these buildings
COVID, the South Loop, this area in the South Loop has been totally devastated by the exchanges leaving. They're here technically, but they're not really here. There's nobody around. It used to be how many thousand people worked for the exchanges or were traders on the floor, most of which didn't have an office, but a lot of them did. But if you're a hotshot law firm or accounting firm, in Chicago, the way it is, you want a nice place in the building where if you get a client, you can take them to lunch without walking out in the snow. I mean, if you don't have that, it's not like somebody won't get a place there, but every nice building has a place you can eat in a place, right?
Yeah.
And so,
or several, Yeah.
But the thing that gets me is that these people, it's not up to me to tell people how to do their business, but the Excelsior had, they were like a trader's bar, right? And other people. But they had this incredible kitchen. And they weren't open on the weekends. And one of my buddies used to kind of manage the place, Billy. I go, Billy, why the hell don't you guys, since on Saturday night in Chicago, when everybody wants to go out to dinner, there's no, there's not enough really, really nice end restaurants. There's nobody down here. Somebody could park. Why don't you have this a Saturday, Sunday only steak place? I mean, it's a nice place. Put some nice tablecloths on. I said, your kitchen here is second to none. They got all the steak fryers, just like Gibson's and everybody. Oh no! Why would we want to do that? Well, I think you'd be mobbed. That's why. I mean, I have a feeling that if you had a place that's only open two nights a week or one night a week, but they want to know part of that. But those places were, so when they left, they cleared everything out, the bars, the seats, all the whole kitchen equipment. How do you go get somebody back in afterward instead of saying, "By the way, here's a whole kitchen, just pile in."
Right, sell the pictures with
Yeah, they puke the pictures out to somebody, the bar, everything else, and you sit there and go, now what are we going to do? I got to spend $2 million to bring the place back up to start when it was just here 3 weeks ago? What's the point? I mean, people do really dumb stuff. I mean, I don't, why they do it, I don't know, but if it's not their money, maybe.
As far as the long-range plans for this place, apparently it's got a 53% occupancy rate, which doesn't tell the whole story either.
I'm gonna guess 53% are paying, 30% are there,
right? And maybe a lot of them aren't paying, but they've still got a paper lease,
yeah.
But it's to turn that around, I'm not sure now what those offices are. I mean, the profile of who's got
all different kinds. There's some that are really nice, others that are like the Stone Ages. I mean, whatever it is. There's all different kinds. If you walk in and said, I want one, you probably pile into one where there was a trading firm there where the place is just drop dead gorgeous and set up like you never even do it yourself. And then there's others that are just regular office space. They bring your desks in and away you go. I mean, the place is huge. I mean, wherever you want is available, I'm sure. But if you try and get high end, they actually busted up and they have a parking garage downstairs, which they never used to have. That was one of the buildings that got flooded up to the downstairs with the Chicago flood.
With the tunnel system.
Yeah, because they were tied into the tunnels.
Oh yeah, that's where they would get their mail.
Yeah, the engineer took me down one flight of steps, and right above the basement, to the one step there was all the water. So yeah, well, they were trouble there for a while. Boarding, all those old buildings were all tied into that.
Well, you know, I just noticed, you know, anecdotally, I mean, a couple of weeks ago I went downtown and took the Brown Line, you know, it goes down Wells and over Van Buren, up Wabash, and I look at buildings that I recognize, or some of them I had deals with when I was working in the title business, and see how that building's looking these days. And I was amazed the last time I did this, how many of the upper floors of a lot of these buildings were clearly now vacant.
Yeah, all vacant.
And the first floors have been vacant already for some time. But I just noticed, you know, office space available signs everywhere, just in like a spin around the loop on the L train. And it didn't look that bad, you know, a couple months ago when I did it, last fall maybe. But I was really struck this time at how it's even more depressed. Just, you know, the number of windows that have lights on it, or just, you know, that have window treatments or blinds or anything else. I was kind of shocked at how much emptier everything is. And I thought generally, you know, it seemed like traffic had increased, you know, a couple times. I thought, gee, there's a lot of, you know, riders going downtown today, and they all look like they had jobs. They're all nicely dressed. They were in a hurry to get there by 9 o'clock. So there must be somebody who's got people coming back to work every day. But I didn't see it in the buildings that I was looking at.
There's a pretty good bump up, and I can't quantify it, since January 1st. Some people, retired people, coming back to work. One of the biggest, I think, was the Federal Reserve. Yeah, there wasn't anybody there since COVID. I mean, I don't know how they managed to pull that off, but I think those guys are back 3 days a week. That's a big... But, you know, it takes them a while to get their old habits back, because they were a lot of the guys from the Fed, because I used to meet with these guys a lot over at Ceres. And so they've probably been back. It's now March, and I know all the people at Ceres. And I said, you know, these guys from the Fed, are they coming over? And I said, a few people. It takes a while to get back into your old habits. You know, we get somebody in here a couple nights a week, maybe we'll get a few people for lunch, maybe we get a couple people for breakfast, but not like it used to be. It takes people a while to get back into the, you know, not only that you're downtown, but I mean, there's a vibrancy to this, Jan, which I think you're describing. If the places are full, and if it's kind of fun, the young people don't go right home to the neighborhood, to the neighborhood bar, for instance. They stay downtown. They meet people from downtown. All kinds of, I mean, there's a vibrancy to this. I mean, I can't even describe. When I worked for Pullman, and then they saved me. They transferred me downtown, right, which I hated. But I was at 200 North Michigan, the Borg Warner building. You know where that one is? And
South Michigan by the Adams there?
Yeah, South. Yeah, yeah, right there. It was the Borg Warner building. But every building had a restaurant bar downstairs. The place was absolutely vibrant, and if you had a pulse and were a male, if you didn't find a way to walk through the downstairs of Marshall Fields wherever you were going to lunch, every good-looking girl in town was in that place, looking for perfume, looking for this, looking for that. That's where they all met. It was, I mean, there was a vibrancy to being downtown that you can't even describe now. And the trading floors were all here. The place was alive. Now it's dead. You walk out in the middle of the day, it looks like a neutron bomb went off. There's nobody. There's nobody out. I mean, the lunch places, there's nobody in them. It's sad. But once you lose that vibrancy, you just plain lose it. Now, I think the West Loop has gained some of that from here. The post office has gained some of that. But if you're looking for every man, you still want the transportation to downtown, not to the post office, not to the West Loop. But those places are growing because you don't want the transportation, because you don't want people to be able to get here, right? How sad is that?
Yeah.
The thing that used to be your biggest advantage is now is a disadvantage. You can't let that happen. The mayor's, well, you know, mayor has no idea what I'm talking about.
No. I remember the whole phenomenon some years ago, talking about the term edge cities?
Yeah.
You know, and St. Louis is an example of this, you know, where the suburbs have flourished and the downtown is empty. There's nobody there. But and Chicago had, you know, suburbs that were prosperous and had shopping, you know, Oak Brook, and, you know, that were kind of like competing for the same kind of attractions or people that you know would attend those events or stores, whatever else, and it was easy for them to go the opposite direction than to come downtown. But there's another phenomenon that I see in the like the if you drew a series of concentric circles around downtown Chicago, and when you get to about a mile or two beyond the center of the city, and you go west on Grand Avenue and up Milwaukee Avenue, and those neighborhoods that are some distance from downtown, it's walkable on a nice day, but the average person wouldn't want to walk, it's a little too far. They're flourishing. Wicker Park is kind of an extension of that, and other places around there where there's tons of young people, they're all on bikes, they're all on scooters, and they're all stopping on their Starbucks, they're walking down the street, window shop, stores, galore, lots of foot traffic. That's the way the loop used to be.
Lincoln Park, Armitage, once they started doing all the pay for parking, Armitage is nowhere near. It was like the
Greenwich Village in New York.
Yeah, it was like this. I would say not the poor man's version, but it was the poor person's version of Oak Street in terms of women's shops and everything like that. And they're not
boutique,
there anymore.
Restaurant after restaurant, bar after bar.
But all of a sudden, that's decline some, the neighborhoods age some, that's part of it, but the idea of keeping a place alive for 3 million people, but I mean part of it has to do with not as many, I use the term assistants. When my stepfather was down here, he had a lady from Cuban descent who was his assistant, secretary, whatever you want to call it. She was absolutely terrific. He goes, she's the best I've ever had, she was unbelievable. And he says, if I try to do something, she just tell me, that's my job, you don't ever do that, I'll do it for you. Talk about up front. But he goes, where else, anywhere else, and maybe in New York, can she get to work and back? The husband works, he's got the car. She gets to work and back for, at the time, it was a buck on the CTA for $2 a day. A decent place to have lunch here for next to nothing. And where else can you do that?
Yeah.
And that was a massive advantage at one time. Now it's, Jimmy Lawler, guest and helps me out with the board. His firm that he used to work for in Fay, they do this mortgage, a little bit of a slimy operation, they buy the lower level mortgages from people, and then they manage them, whatever you want to call that, mortgage something company. And had all these people over here in 425. Well, now they left to go to Schaumburg. And I'm thinking, why? There's all kinds of places here. Well, they were put off by Brennan Johnson's. They have just about the number of 200 people, which was the number for the head tax. Does Brennan Johnson even realize that he's chased people out of here? What kind of the guy does he even understand what the hell he's doing? They left because they thought it might come back. They don't be paying a head tax. They weren't going to sign a 5-year lease. Of course, I think they could have just got a yearly
extension. Yeah, when you threaten to do that kind of stuff, you don't have to follow through for
no. Once it's on somebody's, But I mean, I think that they probably could have, if they really wanted to stay, they could have negotiated a year, but they didn't. They went out to Schaumburg. Maybe it was a way to get rid of people. You never know when people move on those kinds of things. But I mean, there's a lot of stuff going against the city, but there's still some positive stuff. And the mayor, what is the story, Jan, with this? He's going to veto this tip thing. I mean, I know a lot of people in the restaurant business, but why exactly? The people who expect you to give them a 20% tip now all over the board, why do they expect to make the same amount as other people?
Well, I never saw any restaurant owner or anything else would ever expect that.
Well, but then, now the mayor is all against it. The alderman would say, well, the story is there was always a carve-out on minimum wage for people who got tips. So minimum wage was 15. You probably got to pay waitresses, 8 or 9, something like that. I don't know what it was, but somewhere there. Well, now there's the mayor wants this thing where they get paid the same amount. Well okay.
Yeah, because it's not his money. He doesn't care.
Yeah, well, evidently. Yeah, it's not his dough. I mean, in his mind, people in business and people that aren't black seem to have an amazing amount of money that you can just take all the time. And there's an unlimited amount there. So, but I don't get it. If I'm paying the waitresses the same amount I'm paying the people in the kitchen to like chop stuff up and cook things, I'm not going to give them the tip. I'm going to split it all over. Why should they get it?
Right.
I mean, I don't mean now, if you're not getting hit up for 20% most places, plus you go to Dunkin' Donuts, they want a tip. And what is all this? And now, and then Trump, on the other hand, says the tips aren't taxable. Why not? Everything I make is taxable. What are we doing here? Is it just this constant buying of votes and not knowing where the money lands, not caring, John? What is it? On both sides.
It's all of that. And it's, you know, again, you know, when you see that, you know, people's lives or businesses in terms of some sort of, you know, what a social studies teacher like Brandon Johnson would see it as, something that he has never had any experience with. He's never had to meet a payroll. I don't know that he's ever worked a restaurant job or, you know, had a lot of dealings.
I don't think he's ever had a real job.
Well, yeah, and even the ones he's gotten, he doesn't perform. So,
is a community organizer a job?
But these people think of this in terms of some kind of, you know, and now they've got the power and now they've got backing, you know, people, you know, a flow of money for, you know, support where he can do no wrong. And he just sees this as an opportunity to right all the wrongs that he's, you know, thinks he's had his finger on all this time and has never been able to do anything about. And now the sky is the limit. And he doesn't have the ability to think in terms of what this will mean for the average, you know,
well, it's
restaurant owner, homeowner, employer, employee. It doesn't matter. This is beyond it. And this is the real danger of having mayors or any kind of public officials with zero experience in things that they're going to
do. Well, but then you have people in the White House where let's just give all the money to the companies because they should really be running the world anyway, and have stuff like, you know, not having to pay taxes ever on stock if you die and give it to your kid. Stuff like why if I manage money for somebody, we do manage money, we get paid a fee, we don't participate. Like if it's a hedge fund, if you participate, it's a hedge fund. But if I ran a hedge fund and all of a sudden 50% of the income, say I got 20% of the income from the hedge fund, the law now says that if the hedge fund has 20% capital gain, long-term capital gains, I get to participate in the capital gains. John, I'm just getting a bonus. Those capital gains aren't mine. Yet that's the carried interest that everybody's talking about. Now, that shouldn't be there. I mean, come on. I mean, why should people in business be able to write off their dinners every damn night? And you and I go to Prime Cut, which we're probably not going to, and pay, you know, $80 for a steak and $20 for potato or whatever it is. The other person's paying two-thirds of that, right? Why should they get that break for eating dinner?
We're subsidizing.
Yeah, we're subsidizing. Now, so why should that be? So, I mean, if it's not like, you know, welfare is not only for the poor. I mean, welfare is pretty much for the rich too. I mean, so would anybody should we drag back all of this? The answer is yeah. But who's going to do it? Why? I mean, on the one side, people give the money to one end, they vote for them, and the other side, people give the money to their guys and they vote for them. I mean, they're both equally as disgusting in my mind. I mean, does anybody think that the great American tax bill for rich people actually benefit anybody other than them? Does anybody think that Biden's, you know, infrastructure program, and to the extent that it went to bridges and roads, yeah, but the part about neighborhoods getting Wi-Fi and, oh, by the way, the neighborhood's going to end up with everybody's going to get a job and they're all going to pay taxes. I mean, come on.
The charging stations,
yeah,
for electronic
vehicles. Yeah. So, I mean, what's the point of all this? Yeah. But if you're in a stadium, if you and I, if we had the security contract, it's a great idea, right?
Well, the key is to misspend the money before anybody catches you.
No, the key is to be on the dole, not like us. Instead of yelling into the crowded saloon, hey, those people are drinking too cheap. We want to be in the saloon, don't we?
Hell yeah.
Well, I mean, wait, this stadium's a great idea. How many hot dog stands you say I have? Three? Wow. Okay, then. So what do you make of this? We're still up 133. We've had this huge spin around. As Trump said, he's talking to Iran. I have no idea over there who's around that he's talking to, that somebody's not trying to kill. But let's say, for instance, we do get some kind of an end to this. I'm all for it, aren't you?
Oh, hell, God, yeah.
Absolutely.
I was not in favor to begin with.
I mean, neither. So, I mean,
my choice.
If they can, you know, find a... I think he's starting to realize how unpopular this is. And I think, you know what, though? If that's the reason why he stops it, and he stops it, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I wish former presidents had been as, you know, willing to change course.
Plus,
in some ways, I think whatever else, you know, has come down the road here, I think it's clarified and maybe sort of changed the thinking of some of our allies who I think needed to be reined in or at least have a wake-up call for, you know, where their national defense is going to be if push comes to shove, and that they need us more than we need them.
Well,
so then maybe that's a good thing. Well, Jan, to
I don't think Britain needs as much as we do. We've bombed seven countries in the 13 months this guy's been in office. China hasn't done that. Britain hasn't done that. France hasn't done that. You only need the big number if you're going to start bombing.
Well, it would be more if we listened to them. So.
Ah, all right. Well, anyway, I don't know what our lineup is.
They love us to bomb you know, Russia and everything else.
Well, Russia likes to bomb.
Don't exonerate that.
Oh no! Did I mention Russia? I did not say that. I was careful.
No, but I mean, Britain would rather have us bombing Russia.
I don't know.
They want us to be in Ukraine. So they've got designs that we don't want to go along with.
Okay,
so.
Well, I'm just saying we bombed seven countries in 13 months. That's a lot. S&P futures up 125. Way different than when I came in. And oh, by the way, my clients will be happy, so I'm happy here. S&P futures or Nasdaq futures up 484 after being down 175, maybe. So that's a 750 or 650 spin. That's a real number.
Let's keep our fingers crossed.
Jan, I just wish you would when you got the call, I could one or two futures is all I ask. Just, I wouldn't be greedy. Be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
Time to time, everyone goes bust. You'll be back in the game before you know it.